Hello, pet lovers. Welcome to All My Children Wear Fur Coats on Pet Will Radio. This show is brought to you by the law offices of Hoyt & Bryan, MyPetWill.com, and PetFriendly.love. I'm your host, Peggy Hoyt. It's my pleasure to be with you today and every week. And today we have a very, very special guest. I'm very excited to introduce to you Leo Grillo. He is the founder of Delta Rescue. That's capital D, capital E, capital L, capital T, capital A, Rescue. Hi, Leo. How are you?
Hi, Peggy. This show came as unbelievable timing. I had just written a letter about our bequests, about, legacies. And 3 days later, I got your email on my on the website, and Pet Will Radio. I said, they actually have such a thing. This is fantastic. And I'm trying to tell people, the way is Christmas past, present, and future. That's what I tell people. We have Christmas past, all the history of humans and what they did to animals. Christmas present, the animals are okay, but not really. But Christmas future is in our hands. And I'm telling people, your legacy, who you are, who you really are, your autobiographical statement of who you are, not what people think you are. That's your legacy. And if you're so inclined, help these animals so that Christmas future will be bright and Tiny Tim will live and the animals will be happy. And then you come along.
Absolutely.
And
well, and there are no coincidences, right?
Let me put it this way. When there are, I don't believe they are.
Okay, good.
I'm not sure about that. That's not a coincidence. Amazing, how we got together. But thank you for having me on the show. This is like perfect timing.
Well, you are very welcome. So I want you to do a couple of things. I want you to tell us about the man, Leo Grillo. And then I also want you to tell us about your journey and how it brought you to Delta Rescue.
Well, I always tell people, my daughter, my 19-year-old daughter, who's everything to me, I tell her all the time, I said, no matter what I do, she laughs or what I said, well, I'm colorful. I mean, that's all I could say. Well, good or bad, I'm colorful. But the journey, I remember as a child rescuing the little bird, rescuing this or that or a fish, and you don't know where that's going to lead. And out here in California, I'm an actor. I came to California to be in movies. So I'm out here working in workshops and with a whole bunch of actors, and then I went to see a friend, my best friend, actually up in Bakersfield. From Hollywood to Bakersfield, we have to go about an hour and a half up through the Angeles Forest and coming out into the desert on the other end. And for about a month, I had three cats. I brought those three cats to California with me. And for about a month, I was having dreams. I had a dog. I had a black dog. A black dog came into my life. And I kept this maybe half a dozen times in a month. I dreamt this. So on the way to Bakersfield, one trip, I looked off to the right above Angeles Forest up in the mountains. And off to the right, about a few hundred yards, was a black dog. And he was, you can tell, tired. Dragging, he's really, really out there tired. So I pulled over. There's nobody else on the road. I pulled over and I'm, calling to him and waving to him. And so he saw me. He started coming toward me. And I remember he came down to this little ravine just before he climbed it to come up into where I was in the car. And he got down there and he looked at me, and he's this beautiful black Doberman Labrador. These dark eyes, and he looked at me, and he came up the hill as fast as he could, and it dawned on me, wait a minute, I have cats. Here I am out in the middle of nowhere, all alone, and this Doberman is charging up the hill toward me. What's going to happen? I just didn't have it. This was, and he just came and he looked at me. I took my belt off, and I put my belt around his neck, and I put him in the old car that I had, and I got in the driver's seat and went another 45 minutes to Bakersfield, and this guy just stretched out and put his head on my lap. So I'm driving with this Dobie, and his head is on my lap, and he fell asleep. And that's it. This is like you go to some foreign country and you find a child, and you take this child, nobody's around, you take the child to give him a better life. And that's what I felt. I felt, oh my God, this is my son. You know, I was single, and I said, this is my son. And so I took him to Bakersfield, and my friend owned a movie theater up there. So I came up with Delta. I named him Delta later because it meant change. I was into science, and so change was the symbol, the triangle. So the first thing he did was give him hot dogs. He had the best hot dogs in his movie theater. He had Hoffy All Beef hot dogs. So here's my dog, you know, chomping down the Hoffy All Beef hot dog. And I didn't know what to do because I had cats. So my friend kept him for a few weeks while I found, you know, ways to keep Delta. And I rented things. I rented backyards. You know, people are renting rooms when they have a divorce. And I said, do you have a backyard? Yeah, can I rent it? And in the process of doing it, you know, I would take Delta everywhere. I have to be with him all day. Yeah, I couldn't take him home. You know, so I would go everywhere. Went to the beach, went here, went there. We used to go to the one of the places, the marina, and he would get a strawberry ice cream cone. And people would stand around, watch it, like 20 feet away. They're afraid of him. And they stand around watching him eat his ice cream cone. And I take him to the beach, and he would swim in the water. He never got his head wet. He's always shoulder high, you know. He's swimming like a gentleman, like a, you know, a butler. He's got his shoulder above the water. And one day, he came out and he started barking at the water. And for about 5 minutes, this dog, you couldn't move him. He was just staring at the water, barking, barking. The lifeguards came over. And, you know, you're not supposed to have a dog on the beach. You go, yeah, but, you know, something's out there. And about 100 yards off, eventually, in a few minutes, a whale surfaced. I mean, a whale came up. And so Delta found a whale.
Oh, my gosh.
And they had to call the, you know, the whale people and get this guy back out to safety. And it made all the news that there was a whale. But, you know, my dog found him. So, but, you know, sadly, with everything, you know, I mean, we went out and we found 35 dogs one day and taking a hike in the Angeles Forest. And I put food that I had for Delta. I went down, bought a couple hundred pounds of food, spread for all these dogs, and 35 dogs came out.
Oh, my gosh.
And they became that. Yeah, they became my passion is how am I going to help these guys? I called everybody. Nobody would help. One outfit. Oh, yeah. If you bring them in, you know, what do you do? Well, we can't tell you. And I found out later they killed everything they ever touched, and nobody would do anything. So, you know, that was the beginning of Delta Rescue. I named it after him, and how we got the name that we grew into, dedication and everlasting love to animals. Here's a good one for you, an exclusive. We didn't know what Delta meant other than Delta was his name. So we're on the Secretary of State. We're on with the California Secretary of State to try to reserve a name for this organization I was going to start. And I said, Delta. And they said, Delta what? No, just Delta. You know. And they said, well, you can't have just Delta. It has to stand for something, like make up some words. So right there on the phone, we did dedication and everlasting love to animals, which I thought was a silly name. But we got it. And then I could just say Delta after that. And, you know, it was so, like you say, no coincidences. I mean, we grew into it because it is actually that. I mean, it's dedication to animals, all animals, not just dogs and cats and horses, even the mouse, you know, even it doesn't matter. And everlasting love. Well, isn't that what we're talking about here? You know, we're talking about a big spiritual thing as well as just a physical thing. And it, again, it's to animals, to all animals. So that was Delta Rescue. It was all for him. And I only had him 3 years. He got a cancer and did everything. And, you know, we lost him. But that was, you know, if you read Animal News from Heaven, which is on our website, it's a free book, which you can download as a PDF onto your, you know, telephone or whatever. There is a chapter in there about Delta. And this is the lady, Miriam Bosbrook, who wrote this, was communicating with people on the other side. And, you know, whether you believe it or not, it sure is entertaining and gives you something to think about. And if you believe in Rainbow Bridge, this will, you know, reinforce that. But apparently Delta not only guides this mission all these years, but he visits regularly. That is in her book, and she came up with a whole bunch of things that's in the book, and I didn't know any of it until I got it. I said, I never told her any of this. How does she know these things? So I think it, you know, it feels like something's right about what she wrote. And that's, like I said, that's for free. And if you have a question about, is Rainbow Bridge real? You know, what happens when you meet at Rainbow Bridge? You know, this book sure will, help you decide that for yourself.
Well, thank you for that book then, Leo. Yeah. We really appreciate it. And just to repeat for our listeners, if you'd like to download a copy of the book, Animal News from Heaven, you can visit deltarescue.org and go to their estate planning area and find the link and download the book.
There you go. And then pretty soon, and I almost don't want to say this because people go to Amazon, but as soon as we get a couple of technical things straightened out, we have the book in Kindle form, which will be on Amazon for like $3 or something. And I think for $5, you can get a hard copy. They make you charge. I mean, we give it for free, but they, you know, you have to charge with Amazon. But they'll have an audience there that never, you know, people that never heard of us or heard of the book, all of a sudden they'll run into it. So that's what we're hoping, is that, you know, a lot of people will read it. Very, 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 very historically accurate book, by the way. This you're hearing about animals from the 1920s, 1930s, and you know, people of the last century, and animals that, I mean, Rin Tin Tin, you know, I mean, circus animals. I mean, she's interviewed Steve Irwin, you know, she's interviewed people, and it's almost as if they were standing there and it was a live interview, except, you know, she was communicating spiritually and they weren't actually physically there. But it's a very entertaining book, very and you feel like there's something to this, there's something beyond, you know, there's something more, you know, what if she's right?
I hope she is.
Yeah. We live for that.
Absolutely. So you have quite a number of dogs and cats at your facility. Tell us where you're located and tell us about all the animals that you're taking care of right now.
Well, we are around, this is almost 40 years now. Next year will be 40 years I've been doing this. And I started No Kill. Back in the day, I was, you know, oh, they called me all kinds of things. You're a collector. You're a hoarder. You're this, you're that. No, I just don't want to kill. I mean, I'm, you know, why would I be rescuing animals and killing them? I mean, that doesn't make sense. The euphemism is euthanize. You know, we euthanize our animals. No, you're killing them. So we don't do that. And then after a while now, a lot of people are claiming they're no kill. And unfortunately, we just did a survey on this. Some very big outfits are claiming that they're no kill. And what they're doing to live up to that is they're taking the animals that they want to kill and they're sending them someplace else to be killed so that they can say that they're no kill. So when that started happening, I said, wait a minute, no kill is not good enough. Let's say what we really are is care for life. Now we're care for life. The animals that I rescue are abandoned in the wilderness, in the deserts, in the forest. And they're starving, or they were born there. They were born of parents who were abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And they're domestic animals, and they're starving, and they're injured, and they're sick, and whatever. So I spend my time, you know, rescuing those animals and bringing them in. We used to adopt. I wrote a book on adoption. I made a movie with celebrities. Back in the day, you had, the Love Boat was on and MASH was on and all those kind of shows. And I had those people in my movie. It was called The Safe House, How to Find a Loving Home for Your Pet or Rescued Animal. I really thought, you know, it was all about adoptions. And you do this and do that and you get them a home. And then I found out it wasn't working. You know, I mean, it doesn't work. I mean, it's the best people. We're not keeping them for life. And then I commissioned a research study, a market research study of the pet industry, if you will. And I remember the phone call. The phone call I got is about 25, 30 years ago. I got a phone call from the guy who was running it. Is, you won't believe it. We just found out. My researchers verified this. What? What'd you find out? This is shocking. What is it? People in America only keep their pets 2.5 years.
What?
Whoa. People in America only keep their pets 2.5 years. And that was before, think about this, 25 years ago. Then we had a recession. We had a housing burst. We had all, you know, the bubble thing. We had all this stuff turned everything upside down. It's probably much less now. But you and I and everybody listening, most likely are keeping their animals for the full 15 years. And there's a whole bunch that are keeping them for a few months. This average is 2.5 years, but that's not real either. It's much less. You know, most people in America are, they're disposable pets for whatever reason, in and out. And when I heard that, I thought, you know what? I'm never, because I had an instance where one of my favorite dogs I adopted to a family that was wonderful. They were supporters. They were terrific people. She was 10 years old. I remember when I rescued her and her kids from just before the night before flood, and Bonnie, and they took Bonnie, and you know, I checked up on Bonnie, and she was, oh, she's on the couch for with the other dogs for Christmas. Well, in the summer I called, how's Bonnie? Oh, we put her to sleep. What? We put her to sleep. The vet, you know, a vet in the shopping center says, oh, she's developing kidney problems. She's developing kidney problems. So you put her to sleep without calling me. At the time, we had a program we had just started with UC Davis. We started the world's first kidney dialysis for dogs back 25 years ago. Changed human medicine within 3 years. All the human medicine changed because there was a kidney, a disposable kidney, artificial kidney that we were using. The humans were having glass kidneys washed out with a chemical, and the chemical was a carcinogen. So they wanted to put the disposable kidney on the market, and the FDA says, well, you don't have any tests. And they said, well, will you accept a few hundred dogs that have been dialyzed up at UC Davis? And they said, well, sure. And we made, you know, when there was the first couple of years of the program, we made all the covers all over the world of kidney magazines, you know, how the animals gave back to people. And at any rate, I was heavily into kidneys, and here they took one of my favorite dogs and they killed her because some local shopping mall vet said, oh, she's developing kidney problems. And probably all it meant was a couple of elevations because she ate that morning. I mean, you know, it was stupid. So we got in a big fight, and I slammed the phone down. I said, I will never, ever, ever adopt an animal for the rest of my life. This will never happen. We are now Care for Life. And that was really the upshot of a lot of things. But Bonnie was the trigger. And we haven't adopted any dogs or cats or anybody. No, they come in and they live for life. We take care of them. And as you know, life is short. So it's
right.
Really,
yes,
you
it
know,
is.
You do everything you can. Yeah, do everything you can for them. And, you know, and we do. You know, we have a big medical program. We do everything we can for them, keep them feeling good and happy as long as we can, as long as they want to. And that's the upshot of it all. We are Care for Life.
Okay, well, that makes absolute sense how you got to that place, so that you know unequivocally that every animal that you rescue has a home for life.
For life, yeah. And they know coming in. And I, you know, I rescued a whole family recently. We've got a whole family, mother, father, and it kind of never happened before like this, but a mother, father, and 5 puppies all together. And I mean, they were freshly abandoned, and we have them all. And some of my supporters wrote in, a couple of them, and said, hey, you know, these puppies should get homes. Why did you break your rule and adopt them? But no, because, you know, there's 5 puppies. What are the odds that one of them is going to make it 15 years in somebody's home? What are the odds that the other, you know, 3 more are going to be dead in the next 3 years, and then one might go 7? I mean, no, the odds are saying that people will not keep their pets. The best people. I wrote the book on adoptions. I know how to screen people. If you write to us or go on the website and say you want to buy, and I have another book, a little one that I made, I don't know, 20 years ago. Half of the book is all of the questions you ask and the point system and how you can find the best people to adopt your, you know, your animal. But with all of that, I mean, I know adoptions and I know they don't work. But if you have an animal in the pound who's going to die, give them that. Give them a home, you know, roll the dice, because it's better than what's going to happen this afternoon.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. So how many animals do you have there now, Leo?
We've had up to 1500. I lose track because we, you know, get some in, some out, but I would say in ballparking, I know we have over 800 cats and I know we have over 600 dogs, and
okay.
Then we have horses. A few other little guys, but yeah, the dogs and cats. The cats have overtaken the dogs, and the cats live in indoor outdoor catteries. We have like 3 dozen of them, so they have rooms and the little, you know, doors that they go in and out, little windows. and they have air conditioning inside, or they can go outside in the heat if they want, or you know, do whatever they want, climb things.
I see some cool pictures on your website of some of your outdoor habitats for your cats, and it looks like they're having a grand old time.
Yeah, you know, there's a great thing on the website. I haven't seen it in a while, but I think it's 9 pages, maybe it's a dozen pages by now. But there's a section where it's all photos. You go through, I think it's, there's a tab. I'm on the website myself right now to check because we change it every now and then. But photos, page after page, they're all thumbnails. And then you click on them, you get a full page. There may be a dozen pages of animals, pictures and little captions and things that, you know, people can see some of our clan. I want to mention something else, but I'll save that for another segment here. You asked me a question later, and then talk about something else we have for free. Yeah.
Or just go ahead and tell it so I don't forget.
Well, it's a movie for free. It's a movie called The Rescuer. It's on the website.
Oh, okay.
There's, you know, important rescues in my life kind of thing. And I started a rescue with a mother, father, and 2 puppies. And that's the beginning of the story. Almost 2 years later, 10 days short of 2 years, I finally got the 2 parents. And a whole bunch of stuff happens in between, including 3 more litters of puppies.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
That whole story, that won all kinds of awards as a documentary in theaters and stuff, but, you know, in festivals. But it's called The Rescuer. It's about an hour and a half, and it's a feature. It's a full feature, and it's free. Now that they could stream. I mean, years ago, we used to say, well, if only they could stream things, you know. Now you can stream things. So they could watch it. The kids could watch it. Promise you it has an uplifting Chariots of Fire kind of ending.
Cool.
And it's really nice. Yeah.
Now, do you have to have a lot of volunteers, Leo, to help you out at Delta Rescue?
No, we can't have any. And this is an interesting thing. Everybody has to be paid. Now, California is kind of different. In California, we had in 1984, we had a case where we had a volunteer. He worked there, and she just came in to help now and then and what have you, and then eventually she moved into an apartment that was there and brought her animals, like 20 of them, and somebody complained that we were not paying this person for living there. And it was, well, you know, she gets some expense money for whatever she does, but she lives here for free. And she's a volunteer. Well, they went to court, and a judge listened to the case, and the judge said it's a $10,000 fine, but I'll suspend it because you're giving her a place to live to make up for the minimum wage, you know. And you cannot have a volunteer if you're taking a paying job away from a California citizen. That was the ruling. That's from a judge in a court. Nobody believes this, but I was there. So you can't have volunteers if they're going to take a paying job away from somebody. Now, what about, you know, people licking envelopes for their church group in the basement and sending out? Well, I don't know. All I know is the judge told us it's a $10,000 fine, and it's going to be more serious the next time because now I know it. You know, I didn't know it back then. But they said if there's a paying job, you must have somebody earning money for that job. You can't have a volunteer doing it for free. Then you have the whole work issue. Now you have the whole now and then I dream that I have, you know, $20 million. Somebody sends $20 million and says build a sanctuary somewhere else and move it.
There you go. Yeah,
that's I would tell anybody who's thinking of coming to California, go to Nevada.
Right. You need to catch up with one of those folks that won the $500 million lottery a few weeks ago in California.
Did we have one?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
11 people won it, and so each of them got $29 million. So they don't need all that money. They should give it to you.
Well, for what it's worth, I always say you can't catch a fish without a hook. You can't win a lottery without a ticket. So whenever I happen to be in a store and it's like in the hundreds of millions, they give me one of those tickets. You never know.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I am enjoying the pictures on your website as we're talking. I want to do a quick station break. You're listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats on Petwheel Radio. I'm your host, Peggy Hoyt, and today we are talking with Leo Grillo, who is the founder of Delta Rescue. If you want to join this conversation, you can do that live at mixlr.com/Petwheel. We are talking about Delta Rescue, dedication, and everlasting love to animals. Mr. Grillo has a very unique concept where he is not only no kill, but no kill means care for life. An animal comes to his rescue and it stays there for the rest of its lifetime. Leo, just reiterate what you said a moment ago, because I'm still shocked about people in America only keep their pets 2.5 years.
Yeah, I did a market research, but a long time ago, it was like 25 years ago. It's worse now. It was before the housing thing and the recessions and all. But yeah, they were surprised as heck. They were doing a research and they discovered that people in America only keep their pets 2.5 years. Why that was important for the pet industry that came up with these numbers, you know, they would turn over. They will sell more doggy dishes every time you get a new animal. So they really don't want you to keep them for life because you have the same set of dishes, you know, but you'll go to the pet shop and buy a whole bunch of new stuff every time you get a new dog. So they were bragging about the fact that people only keep their pets 2.5 years. So it's a good business to be in, the pet industry said. But I was shocked. And well, there you go. And, you know, I verified it on my own, having written the book on adoptions and stuff. I mean, I verified it. Yeah, I can feel this is what's happening, even with the very best people.
Wow. Well, I'm just stunned. So we were talking about dogs and cats that are at the rescue, but I notice on your website that it also says that you either did or you did some horse rescue.
Oh, we've had horses for the duration, from the early 80s. Horses are, I mean, they're something else. Anybody who knows horses, these magnificent creatures, they're so pure. They don't have a mean bone in their body. They're afraid, some of them, you know, the fight or flight thing, but people abuse them. And of course, something else is going on. The price of hay went from a few dollars a bale up to like over $20 a bale. So people couldn't keep their horses. There were false rescue groups who started up to supposedly find homes for your animals, and they were just collecting them to sell to the killer buyers. I just found out from a veterinarian not too long ago that, he was quoting me how many millions, like 2.5 million horses were sent to slaughter in the last few years because of the price of hay. It's incredible. And the meat goes overseas. There's certain countries where they eat horse meat. So, you know, they kill them and ship them. So, and they're the best. Oh God, they're just wonderful. I mean, and they live, you know, we've got them 35 years old. I mean, they live for a long time if you take care of them. And they're gentle souls, big as they are. They're just as gentle as anything. They're very loving. That's why a lot of people, you know, that have disabilities get along with horses great, because there's something deep and spiritual that goes on with them.
Absolutely. I have 3 horses, Leo, and of my original group, 2 of them were wild Mustangs that I adopted through the Bureau of Land Management program. So I have a special place in my heart for Mustangs. And you and I would get along very well in person, because every animal that's ever crossed the threshold at my house that wasn't a foster still lives there, or lived there until the end of their lifetime. Yes, have to make decisions very carefully, because once they arrive, they do not leave.
That's right. Well, we don't make any decisions. If they need a home, they come. not people's pets. I've got to tell everybody that. We don't take pets from people. We don't have anything to do with people. We don't adopt to them. We rescue the animals that have nobody. There's nobody else. There's nothing between them and death except us. If there are other people involved, then, you know, the phone never stops ringing. Everybody has an excuse to give up their child. And no, we're not going to condone that.
Okay, so there's a bunch of dogs in South Florida that need you desperately. You probably know or have heard about this situation in the Redlands in South Florida where they're just living wild and they're sick and injured and having puppies and people are using them as target practice and, you know, it's just a horrible, horrible situation.
I've been, that sounds like what, you know, out here, that's what I was faced with, especially in the early days, and target practice being one of them. But no, I hadn't heard that. I'm so busy out here that I don't follow a lot of things, but is anybody doing anything about it? Is anybody trying to help?
Yes, there's a number of groups that are trying to help, and periodically some rescue organizations will go down there and gather up as many as they can bring. I know of one organization that when they went down there, they brought back 65 dogs, but, you know, barely put a dent in the dogs that are down there. So it's a pretty desperate situation, and as you say, some of the local organizations are unwilling to take them because of their quote unquote no kill philosophy, or they want, you know, they want their adoption numbers to look good. And many of these dogs may not be adoptable.
No, that's why you do this. You have a sanctuary, you let them live it up. Probably 90% of all my dogs were, they're not really feral, but they're one first generation removed. So they're not friendly with people. They've been abused. People have done terrible things to them. So they're kind of like the South Florida dogs. And that's why we have, you know, we built the place the way we did so they can live it out and have these big yards, have their straw bale dog houses. You know, they get care. Eventually they calm down enough to where they get plenty of medical. I mean, the guys leash train them. They get to the hospital, they get their, you know, every year they get their dentistry, they get their heart checked and all that. And they're just really, every dog's a wonderful, and so they're wonderful animals. If they're a little afraid because of what's happened to them, that's no reason to say, you know, they're feral, leave them alone.
Right.
I wish where they were closer. I wish if we had the money, that'd be something, you know, that'd be a place to open another sanctuary and have these animals come in, because that's what started this.
Exactly the dogs and that you would be, have a heart for. So you mentioned something a minute ago. I want to come back around to that because I'm kind of intrigued. What is a straw bale doghouse?
Straw bale doghouse on the website. We invented them. Manika Gandhi of India wrote a letter about how wonderful they were. I mean, this is crazy stuff. We take 25 bales of straw. It's a it was a rice straw at the time. Now you're stuck with wheat a lot of the time. But 25 bales of straw, 3 sheets of plywood, you build a house, and it doesn't hurt the footprint in your yard. It's actually now on top of the house. So if you want a place for your dogs to, you know, live and cooler in the summer and hotter in the winter, T51 insulation, that's what it is. So we have that on the website on a video, and we give you the permanent version, the formula for how to make the adobe coating that goes on the outside if you wanted to make it permanent. Although we've seen the straw bale doghouse, we tested it, you know, the straw bale doghouse can take all kinds of weather if you do it the way we suggest. For the whole life of the dog, you don't really have to, you know, do the stucco, but the stucco kind of looks nice and it works. My best moment with this was a place in Romania had their very first animal shelter after a war, and they built this straw bale doghouse. They changed the setup though. I have it angled so that there are big steps the dogs could get to the top, and they put steps like regular steps in the front. They made it that way, but here's straw bale doghouses with dogs in halfway around the world in a magazine, the whole big article, like, you know, 10 pages, and they keep in a foreign language, they kept saying Delta Rescue in English, Delta Rescue, Delta Rescue. But the dogs are the same. When you see them on the straw bale doghouse, those dogs could have been in California. Our dogs could be in Romania. You know, I mean, the dogs, they're the same everywhere. You know, it's heartbreaking to know that these wonderful animals that you have in your home are out in the streets, you know, starving and full of, you know, parasites and in other parts of the world.
It is heartbreaking. So one of the unique things that you have on your website, Leo, are lots of different ways that people can learn more about estate planning and how to make their legacy work for animals. And of course, that's something that's near and dear to my heart because of Petwill and Petwill Radio and the fact that I am an estate planning attorney and I counsel people on a daily basis about how to create estate plans that provide lifetime protection for their pets. But you have a lot of good information on your site. So I would love for folks to go to deltarescue.org, go to the estate planning donations, and you can get lots and lots of information about how to make a planned gift. But you have a unique program, Leo, and tell us about it. That is the Companion Trust Program. So tell us about that.
Well, I don't know that we have many takers, but I thought, the first thing is, who are we? I mean, who are you? You ask yourself, who am I? And you can eventually answer that throughout your life. You say who you are. But the answer to who are we really is our legacy, and it will live on forever. That's my point. So it doesn't matter what people think of you. It doesn't matter how anybody else defines you. And, if you were a fly in the wall, you should hear the way people talk about you. So it doesn't matter. Your autobiographical statement to the world of who you were in this lifetime, that's your legacy. And that's what defines you. And the product of your life's work and your everything that you've done, putting that product, that estate, to work for something that you care about, that defines who you are. So in the case of animals, I always tell people, once you've taken care of your family and all, then, consider our animals as part of your heirs. There are people who are looking for organizations, they love animals, to which they could leave a meaningful legacy gift. And when they do, they find organizations that there are a couple out there. There, one of them is over 160 years old, got hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank. Well, even if a person left $1 million that year, in a bequest, that organization will suck it up and just, forget it. So in other words, it'll be forgotten. It's not meaningful. If you gave $1 million to the three ladies down the street, they're going to the pound and rescuing animals and taking them to PetSmart on the weekend. That money would probably not get to them because they probably would not be around by the time, you passed, and they're gone. They're in and out. There's so many organizations close, especially small ones. So we tell people, we're in a sweet spot. We're 40 years old. We're going to be here. We don't, if you left a chunk of money for the animals and you wanted to leave a six-figure gift, guess what? I mean, we appreciate and use that money. It's not going into some savings account, somewhere. This is being put to immediate use. So we have all of that, to offer people that, look, we're going to be around. We're not going to disappear. We're not going to be out of business. But the other thing is about 80% of our income is bequests. 80% of our income is from people who've gone ahead and who had the foresight to leave something for the animals to change the future. And to help animals, when they were no longer here, that if they saw the mother and father and puppies that just came, a few weeks ago, if they saw that rescue in their mind, before they passed a few years ago, that was one of their intentions, that someday there's going to be a family of dogs that, thanks to me, can come into the sanctuary. So all of our bequests, our information is focused on helping change the future for animals, for ours and for in general. And if people want, I have a legacy letter. It's on the website. We put a copy of it up there. They can read that. It shows the Christmas, past, present, future kind of thing. But when we come to your animals, a lot of people want to know, what about my pets? What can be done, for my animals? Well, first of all, I look at it from the animal's perspective. Say, look, they already lost you. Don't take their home away. Don't do this to them. And, well, what's that about? Well, find somebody. Yes, it could be us, but it could be anybody. But let's say it's us and you were local or close enough. you leave the animals and the house to us. and we put somebody in the house to live and take care of those animals. They live and we pay them a little bit, take care of them, and we do all the medical, and we do all the feeding and all the caring, and then we do the care for life only in their own home. And when the last one passes, then that home, it gets sold, and that money goes to the organization to take care of the rest of the animals. So that was the Companion Trust program, and we did it. I think our number was 17. We got up to 17 people, you know, who signed up and said, okay, I'm going to do that. And they left a little extra money, you know, to take care of the animals, you know, during the time that they were still alive. It's a hard one to manage. I would almost suggest that people around the country look for, you know, family or friends and lock them up, you know, and you'd have to have your kind of lawyer, you know, you'd have to really lock them up to keeping the home and keeping the animals going and keeping everything, you know, happening in that house so the animals have their familiar place to live and not have the double shock of, you know, I lost you and now I lost my home. I'm homeless. You know, I'm out in the street. Worse, I think, is taking them to another place. I mean, you take them to a shelter and they're going to find them a home or kill them. But if they find them a home, now they're in a whole other place. And these animals are going, what did I do? You know, what did I do wrong? What happened here? So and taking them to, if we could do this, which we can't, but if you took them to us and now they're living, you know, with other animals the rest of their life. And meanwhile, they came from a home. They didn't come from the desert or from the wilderness. They came from your home, the couch, you know, watching TV with you.
Right.
And it would be unfair to do that for them. So that's what it really is, getting people to think about leaving their home and a little money to somebody to take care of all of this. And then after the home is sold, they can give the person who took care of them some of the money from the sale of the house and, you know, hopefully donate some of the money to an animal organization that will save more animals. That was the idea. And they say, oh, you're greedy. You want people's houses. No, really, we don't want people's houses. It's a management headache. The house owns you. We don't need, you know, 17 houses owning us. But it is for the animal's sake, keeping them happy as long as they can.
Well, that is an admirable thing to do. And many, many of my clients, that is their goal, is for their animals to stay at their homes for the balance of their lifetime. And in fact, that's the goal that I have for all of my animals. I mean, goodness gracious, I have 5 dogs, 3 horses, and 2 cats at the moment. And I don't want them, A, to be separated, or B, to have to leave their home. And you're right. It'll be sad enough for them to lose me and, you know, their daily routine and the way that I take care of them and love them. And, but yeah, to lose their home on top of it. So yeah, anybody who's listening, I can help you out either through petwill.com or through the law offices of Hoyt and Bryan. And are you still doing the program at all, Leo?
If we're asked and, you know, we suggest other things, and if they're really, really, really up against it and they want to do it, yeah, okay. Yeah, we would do it. It's hard because, I mean, you say family and friends, and I just found out the hard way that family is not necessarily family once somebody passes. I've seen some predators in my time in estates that we've been involved in, and they're very frightening. So you want people on your end to lock things up as best they can, because awful things happen. You know, so I don't know how you would find someone that you would trust that would actually be trustworthy after you're not there to make sure they're trustworthy. That's the hard one.
That is the hard one. And it would be a management challenge, but potentially not one that I'm opposed to taking on. So you gave me some interesting ideas for a not-for-profit organization that could actually benefit other not-for-profit organizations, but at the same time, address this issue that people have with what happens to my pets if something happens to me. And I'm sure you and I are on the same page where it would be the ultimate cruelty for a loved pet to end up in a shelter just because their parent died. I mean, if you think no more of your pets than that, then you probably shouldn't have them in the first place.
I've thought of this for years. We've actually known about this for years. And, you know, somebody said a long time ago, well, why didn't you go into that? Well, because I'm rescuing animals abandoned, like in South Florida. I mean, I'm rescuing those animals. But there is that giant need that if somebody, as you say, a nonprofit that would feed other nonprofits, but if somebody, an organization did recognize that probably the biggest need in the pet community is exactly that. What do I do when I die? What happens to my pets? How can I assure that they will, you know, they will have the, a remainder of their life will be a good one. Any solution, there are a number of solutions to that. And, you know, that's the ticket for somebody to do, but it's a management nightmare.
Right.
I wouldn't, you know, in a million years ever want to be saddled with that. I'd rather deal with the everything with the animals. And it's hard enough, you know, anytime, pardon my negativity, and if you will, but I've been through a lot. The hardest thing is dealing with the people connected with the animals. If the world were just all about the animals and they could take care of themselves, then this would be a happy thing. But having to deal with workers' comp issues and other legal challenges that pop up because, you know, people are jealous. People see something that's successful, that's working for the animals. And a lot of people, actually angry people, have even said to my face, why do you do this for animals and not people like us? Well, because, you know, I'm given this to do for the animals. And so that kind of jealousy fuels things. And an organization like us, we get attacked all the time. We're in the courts getting attacked. You know, you're getting challenged on all levels. So the last thing I would ever do is get involved with, you know, an organization solving people's problems later, you know, on that level. I've learned so much that I just wish there was a world where I could just, you know, deal with the animals and not have all these other issues. I tell people, I'm 18, look at me.
Yes, we need you to live forever, Leo, so that you can continue to do your good work for the animals and for Delta Rescue. I do want to encourage our listeners to go to deltarescue.org and check out what Leo Grillo is doing in his very unique approach to providing lifetime care for animals. So, Leo, it does take a lot of money to run an organization like yours. So how can our listeners help?
Oh, my goodness. Just go to the website. If you go to estate planning section, there are a whole bunch of vehicles down there, and there's ways to help long-term. Your legacy, who you are, define it, you know, and if you're kind enough to make our animals part of it. And I really want to change not just what we have here. I want to change things for the future. I will, and I'm making my own date to come on your show again. We're doing something right now that once the program is put together, I am looking at getting myself somehow exponentially reproduced around the country so that we can help those animals in South Florida. I can guide the rescue of those animals in other states and other, you know, even other countries. It's a humongous program, but I think this is the ultimate contribution that I can make. I know my stuff. I've been doing this for a long, long time. I know how it all works. I know rescue better than anybody. The movie is called The Rescuer for a reason, if they watch it on the internet.
Right.
And I want to take that information and get it to people. And I have a way of doing it. We're putting that program together now. And when it's together, I'd love to come back and talk to you about it so that maybe you can help get the word out, especially when you have a situation like South Florida. Here they will have some guidance and, you know, and how to handle this and direct involvement by me.
Well, yes. And we will be happy to have you on the program again and hear all about this exponentially reproducing yourself program. I guess you're going to be cloning yourself and getting that information out to all of the good people that listen to this show and who have a heart for animals. It's just, it's a forever chore. I know it takes a lot of heart and a lot of dedication and sadly it takes a lot of money to care for all these animals that somebody else decided wasn't worthy of their love?
Well, people may not be able to afford a donation, especially at the level that they would like to. But they have a whole life's worth. They can leave a legacy gift no matter what. You know, they can do that. And if they would get on the web somehow, I have this legacy letter that I wrote. I'm looking at the pictures right now. I did not take these pictures. The only pictures I ever did not take in the letter that I've ever written is this one. I found pictures that show animals around the country, around the world, the way they are today. This is what I see. This is what's there. And then this is what can be. On the right-hand side of the page, this is what there should be. You know, here's the child holding and hugging the dog in bed. Here's the dog running up to you with his leash. You know, here's the blonde lady kissing her Malamute on the face. And here are the two dogs holding a stick together and running through the field, you know. And if you compare that with what's today, when you see the way they have to live, the abuses, the pain, the suffering, you can make that difference. You know, you have the power to take these precious, I call them animal angels, you know, to this new world of love and happiness in their Christmas future. You know, this is, to me, it's all, I see Christmas past, present, and future. You have the power. It's your legacy. You know, you have the power to do that. And that's through, I really believe, through a legacy gift. There's so much money going to change hands, they say, in the next 20 or 30 years. Well, let some of it be for the animals. We can solve this. You know, we can really solve it. It doesn't take much.
That's true. And thank you for that message, Leo. We really appreciate it here at All My Children Wear Fur Coats.